here in Illinois, in the midst of this fertile and productive land, you are indeed fortunate to live. The great issue and problem facing America today, though, is not the question of how we live with ourselves. We've licked many of those problems. If you compare this country with Lincoln's time, it's today a Garden of Eden. The great problem is how we live with others. There are 2.5 billion people on this planet. There are 150 million of them in the United States. If the rest of that 2.5 billion unite against us, we're a lost island in a Red Sea. Freedom cannot only flourish and grow in the United States, it must flourish and grow everywhere if it is to be maintained here. If the rest of the world should go red, America will go red too. You won't have slaves in England. You won't have slaves in Latin America. You won't have slaves in Asia. If you have them there, you'll have them in central Illinois. When you're 7 hours from Moscow, you're a lot closer to the Russians today than you were to Sangamon County in Lincoln's time. I'm not depressed, though, about freedom's battle abroad. There are more free men today in the world than there have ever been. With the exception of Czechoslovakia, no nation which was previously free has become a slave state. And there are many nations and great nations and important nations which were formerly slave states that now know freedom. You know, there have been other slaveries than communism. There was an ism called Nazism, and there was fascism, and there have been all kinds of militarism. Germany is today a free nation, or the western part of Germany is today a free nation, and a functioning democracy for the first time in its history. Italy is today a free nation and a functioning democracy, which it has rarely been in its history. Japan is today a free nation, which it rarely was in its history. India, a slave nation, if there ever was one, is a democratic nation today. Now, that doesn't mean that we necessarily agree with the leaders of India or that they agree with us, but there is freedom in India. You can go to New Delhi today, you can go to Bombay, or you can go to Calcutta, and you can blast the daylights out of Nehru, and you won't go to the penitentiary. That certainly wasn't true 50 years ago. That wasn't true 10 years ago. Vietnam is a free nation. Indonesia is a free nation. The areas of the Arab world have become free nations. Just by agreement within the last 2 weeks, Tunisia has become a free nation. Our neighbor Mexico, for the first time in its long history, is today a free nation. The area of freedom in the world today is an expanding area. The area of the world today in which governments are dominated by despots is a declining area. And that, I think, is one of the most hopeful signs that we have, one which has not achieved sufficient recognition. Of course, the major problem which we face is the problem of what we do about the Russians. War is an impossibility. War is always a failure. War was a failure in Lincoln's time. The fact that we went to war was the greatest failure that the United States Constitution has ever had. But if war was a failure in Lincoln's time, it's an impossibility today. If we start throwing around these hydrogen bombs, it doesn't make any difference about anything. There'll be nothing left. Our cities will be destroyed, the countryside will be seared, our people will be killed, and those that are left will be paralyzed. War is no possible solution today. It's an impossibility. Now, President Eisenhower, I believe, was so wise when they asked him at his press conference about going to meet with the Russians. And he said he didn't have much hope, but he said, I'll go any place, anywhere, anytime for peace, or even just to talk about peace. And how could he have said less as the president of this great republic than that? Now we've got to live with the Russians. It'd be a much pleasanter place if we didn't have to live with them. It'd be awfully nice if we could get rid of them. But they're here, and they're just 8 hours from Beeman. And that's not as far from Beeman as Springfield was in Lincoln's time. So since they're here, we've got to get along with them. I don't think we should be soft with them. I think we should be tough with them. I think we should be hard with them. But I think we've got to negotiate with them. I don't think there's anything that you can say about a continent that you can fly around in 36 hours and say there's a department here and there's a department there. In Lincoln's time, you couldn't go from my home over in eastern Indiana to Beeman in 36 hours. The world's a much smaller world than it was in Lincoln's time. Now we should negotiate with them. We oughtn't to give in. You know, you can negotiate. You don't have to be a sap when you negotiate. There's such a thing as a hired horse trader. And here in central Indiana and central Illinois, we got a few boys that know how to horse trade. Just because we've had a few deals with the Russians and we got skinned, doesn't mean that the next time we don't know how to have enough sense that to take them instead of them taking us. A country that's had enough people in it that have been smart enough to do the things that have been done here ought to be able to produce a few fellas that can negotiate with a bunch of gangsters over there. There used to be a lot of gangsters up here in Chicago, and some people still think there are a lot of them up there. I think we can trade with them. I don't think we ought to give them a damn dime. And I think every time we send them a shipload of wheat or a shipload of butter or a shipload of anything else, we ought to get a ship coming the other way and we ought to count ships. But I still think we've got to exchange ships with them. And I think we've got to exchange ships with the Chinese. And I think before we're through, we'll be doing it. I think we ought to let some of their people come in here. And I think we ought to send some of our people over there. If you could get 100,000 Russians to come here, I don't care if they were all Secret Service agents. You know, a fellow that's a Secret Service agent, even if he's a Russian Secret Service agent, he's still a man. If he can come out here to see what we've got here in Illinois and what we've got here in this central Midwest and our wealth and see what this competitive system has produced and go back to Russia, and I've talked to a lot of people who've been in Russia, and my impression of Russia is one great big slum. If you can come over from that poverty, I don't care how hard-bitten, tough-minded a communist you are, and see what we've got here, you're bound to something's going to occur between the ears. Of course, they're not going to soften up very much. But there are a couple of very hopeful signs today. Number one, Joe Stalin's down under 6 feet of solid earth. Russia's being run by a committee. Did you ever see a committee run anything very well? Now the proof that Russia's being run by a committee is the fact that when Nehru got off the plane the other day in Moscow, Malenkov was standing there, greeting him, and had his picture taken. Now if Russia was an absolute one-man dictatorship, now Malenkov would be a corpse. I don't mean to say that I think the millennium's occurred over there, and I don't think they got freedom over there, and I think there are a bunch of tough, rough and characters over there. But I do think that when they fire a fella and don't shoot him, it's a landmark. Because their tradition has always been, even before the communists came in, that when they fired a guy, they shot him. And the fact that nobody knows who's the head of Russia today, there's a lot of people, you know, that don't think that Eisenhower ought to meet with Bulgarin, because they say Kukshin's the top guy, or Zhukov's the top guy, or some other fella's the top guy. We don't know who the top guy is. You sure as the Dickens knew who the top guy was when Stalin was around. Now they've acknowledged that their agricultural systems failed. And they've acknowledged it publicly. In a nation which can't produce food, isn't going to fight a very tough war. I don't mean we ought to discount them. I don't mean to think we ought to think they're licked. But I know we've got to put our minds and attentions along to getting along with them as best we can. There are a lot of tough characters. You've got some of them in this town you don't like. You wish they were under 6 foot solid feet of earth, but you still get along with them. The world's one small town today. And the only way that mankind can survive is by the capacity of men upon it to get along with each other. Now, the United Nations hasn't been perfect. But the United Nations is the greatest contribution towards peace ever made by mankind, and it's here in the United States. And the United Nations and the very existence of the United Nations upon American soil is an acknowledgement that we're the most important power on earth. And it's a great compliment to us. The very fact that the headquarters of the organization are in New York. The world's come to us. Why, in Lincoln's time, we were just a bunch of pioneers fussing around with some Indians over here in the wilderness. Nobody in the rest of the world paid any attention to us. This was the end of civilization then. Now we're the center of civilization. A Washington, a prime minister, or a king, or a president of some country, he's nothing in Washington. They just check in and out of the hotels there all the time. We've become the tops. But like anybody else that ever got ahead, it requires more wisdom to stay there than it did to get there. And that's exactly the position of the United States in world affairs today. If the answer to Lincoln's question is to be that the world became free rather than the world became slave, it depends upon the wisdom of the United States and the kind of leadership that we select and the judgment of those men in how to horse trade, among other things, for freedom in this world of ours. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Wilkie, for a brilliant address. One of the highlights of our BMET Centennial Town Meetings have been our question and answer periods following the main address. And now may I present to you our own Mr. Carlton Smith, Director of the National Arts Foundation and Honorary Chairman of the BMET Centennial Corporation, Mr. Smith.
I hope I'll be able to get some questions from the audience. The ones that have been sent to me, I will read. Mr. Wilkie, do you see any possibility of the communist rulers freeing their slaves?